Okay, good evening. So I posted a shaila earlier today on the chat. The shaila really was where most of what could have gone wrong in this donut making procedure went wrong, and the question just is, you know, at every step of the way, what's the halacha? So I'm going to really try to start from the top and take it down, and try to provide all the information as well as I can without making this too complicated. But basically the case was, the person was frying donuts, and they fried a donut, which is obviously a power of food, the way we're understanding it. It's made out of dough, and it's fried in oil. Now the issue was that they fried it in a fleishig pot. Now the pot was used previously for meat, and now they're frying it in oil in that same pot. So you have a donut which is frying in oil in a meat pot. And then afterwards, they took out the donuts from the pot, and they squirt inside a nice, generous amount of, I said caramel, maybe it could have been custard, that went in and was dairy. It was a dairy custard or caramel that went inside. And the question was, since they made these donuts inside a meat pot, perhaps they have a problem now because they have dairy custard inside their donut. Furthermore, so the question is, are they allowed to eat these donuts? On the assumption that the answer would be yes, that they're allowed to eat the donuts, the question is, if that's the case, can they now put more custard in the next batch of donuts? The next batch of donuts came out, and now they want to know, could they put more custard into the next batch of donuts? And if the answer to that would be yes, they could put more custard into the next batch of donuts, the question would be, it sounds like everything is fine here, so perhaps they could continue frying more donuts in the same pot, and then intend to fry them in this pot, in this fleishig pot, al das, to go ahead and add more milk and custard in it. That's the shaila that I posted on the chat, and we're going to get there. So now, skip page two.
One variable.
Go ahead.
I think they removed the donuts with the milk spoon.
Yes, I threw in there that they put it, they removed the donuts with the opposite gender spoon. So they used a milchik spoon to get in there. We're not going to address that tonight. I also had, there was a sequel to the shaila as well, that there were latkes frying in butter on the same stove, and some butter splashed out of the frying pan and hit the outside of this fleishig pot. Now they want to know if their pot needs to be kosher. As you probably couldn't imagine, I used my imagination to come up with a case. It was not an actual shaila that was asked to me this morning, but it's kind of symbolic of what a lot of questions come up, especially at that time of the year. People don't always deep fry things in such high quantities. Even if people are deep fry people, when you're making lots of donuts, so often you'll take your largest pot, which perhaps was used the day before for chicken soup.
Would it make a difference if, so your pot, to me, the way I see it is you put like a teeny amount of oil.
No, lots of oil. Donuts. Lots of oil.
So would it make a difference if the donuts are like touching the,
so let's
the
see.
Middle of the pot, or if they're boiling in oil?
So let's go through it. So for now, I'm going to tell you to skip page two. It doesn't have a number on the bottom, but it's the page of Gemara. And go to page three. So just to start from the basics. The Gemara in Chulin and Daf Tzadik Zayin talks about the idea of tam. I'm not going into all the deep machlekes in the different opinions about tam ki ikar, but the general idea that you can have a prohibition for eating something simply because the taste of it exists there. And here you have a case where there was taste that got mixed up, and it comes up in many cases. So if you go to the part where it's dark, Dama Rava Amar Rabbanan B'Taima. The Chachamim taught us that things go after its taste. V'amar Rabbanan b'kfeila, and in some cases you use a kfeila, which is a baker. You ask a baker, a professional chef, someone whose taste is very sensitive. His sense of taste is very strong, and therefore he's able to taste different ingredients in food. V'amar Rabbanan b'shishim. Sometimes Chachamim taught us that when you are assessing whether food is going to be kosher, you use the measurement of shishim. Now, we're accustomed to using the measurement of shishim whenever we want to decide if this is going to be bittul. But the Gemara teaches us that sometimes you taste the food to see if there's a problem there, and other times you use a non-Jew to taste the food. The case of Kfela is a non-Jewish baker. In other cases, you don't use any tasting. You simply use a mathematical equation. What would be the case? Hilkach, mimbish ene minai, tehtera b'taima. If you have mimbish ene minai, which is food which is mutter to be consumed, you taste it. What would be such a case? You have truma, which gets mixed up in chulin. So, yes, there are measurements, but you could have a kayin taste this. The kayin is allowed to eat truma. So he tastes it. It's mimbish einay minay. It's two opposite meaning. He can tell you if he tastes the truma in here or not. Di isura, if it's, for example, chelev, your fat, which is not permitted to be consumed, which gets mixed up into your dish, so you obviously cannot taste it yourself because there's a shayla. Perhaps you're going to be eating chelev. So you ask a non-Jewish chef, somebody who is a professional chef who can taste it and let you know whether or not the fat has given taste to this dish or not. And there are cases, min b'mina delekam lemekam atayim, if you have two of the same min, just one of them is mutter and one of them is aser, halacha is, you obviously won't be able to taste it because everything tastes exactly the same in this case. So therefore, what you do is you use a mathematical equation of shishim to decide whether or not the dish is going to be aser. All right, I'm not getting into all the nuances of these details, but I'm just pointing out to you that clearly we see that the taste of a previous of an isser in your food is what determines whether it's going to be mutter. So therefore, in a case of basar b'chalav, the same thing would be true. If you have basar, you have a meat dish, and you have some chalav that goes into it, you want to know if the chalav, if the milk gave it taste, that would determine if it's going to be a problem of basar b'chalav or not.
I'm assuming taste is deraisa as well, correct?
I'm not getting into the discussion of tamkik whether it's deraisa. It's
tekos about that would make.
It would make exactly. That's exactly what comes out from the biggest nafkamina, whether it's deraisa or drabanon, is in the case of nishpach when it spills out, right, and you no longer have the ability to be able to, and it's not befaneinu. It spills out. It's not in front of you. You can't estimate how much is there. So therefore, there would be enough gemina if you say tam kikim midaraisa, that the taste is like the essence of the food. Midaraisa would be a safek daraisa l'chumra. If it would only be midarabanan, then it would be a safek darabanan, which would be l'kula. But again, we're not getting into that right now. This halacha is actually brought in Shulchan Aruch and Yeridea in Hilchos Taruvos and Siman Tzadik Chesef Aleph. It says Isser Shiras Arif Beheter Mimbish Enim. You have two different meaning, two different types of foods which get mixed together. Kigoin Chelev Shenis Arif Bebasar. You have fat, which is not permitted to be eaten, gets mixed up with meat. Yitamenu nachri, have a non-Jew taste it. Im she'ein by tam chelav oishayimer sheyesh by tam al shu pagum mutter. He tastes it, and he lets you know what it tastes like. It's going to be mutter. You'll see at the end, Ramah says the ein noigan achshul lismechal of the glulim. We don't rely on Jewish people to taste it. The whole idea of tasting is something which is a bit foreign to us, and therefore we always use mishar na kol b'shishim. We always use samach. We don't do experiments to figure it out. That's the first halach we have to get down pat. Number one, you have to understand that whether or not the physical isser is here is irrelevant. The idea is, if the isser lends taste to the food that you are currently eating, then it would be problematic to eat the food. And the next halacha we have to get down is the halacha of Naisin Tam Lifgam. If something adds taste, but the taste that it added was not a good taste, it was a sour taste, it added negative taste to it, it's not a problem. This halacha is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and Hilchas Taruvus and Simon, Kuf Gimel, source 3 on our page, Sif Aleph, Kol Davar Shatayim Pogum, Einay Oyser Ta'aruvasai. Anything which adds a sour taste to a mixture does not ruin the Ta'aruvas. In the same exact Simon, in Sif Hey, I'm skipping a bunch of Sifim over there because it gets very nuanced and very detailed and it gets subject to a lot of different opinions. But in source number 4, you'll see the halacha which is going to be relevant to us, Kol Kedera She'ena Bas Yoyma, Chashiva Taima Lufgam. Now, when you cook in a pot, the assumption that we're going to go with over here is that the pot is porous and the pot is going to absorb taste, and therefore the next time you cook in that pot, it's going to expel that taste back into your food. Now, says the Shulchan Aruch, Kol Kedera She'ena Bas Yoyma, any pot which was not used that day, Chashiva Taima Lufgam, We assume the taste that's going to come out of the pot and go back into your food is tam pagum. It's a sour taste. Ve'ena aisaris does not ruin your food. Now, what is considered a basyema? Again, because this is subject to machlekes, whether it has to do with the actual day or it's in the eis la'eis 24-hour period, says the mechaber, v'nikras basyema kolzman shleish shasa me'eis la'eis achar shem spashal ba'iser. Mechaber paskins, after 20, you need a 24-hour waiting period for it to be not called a bas yoma. So, in other words, if you were to cook at 11:30 at night in your pot, and then you finish cooking your dish, and you go to bed for the night, you wake up in the morning, and now you want to use that same pot at, for example, 9 o'clock in the morning, that's still considered a bas yoma, even though it's a different day. Why? Because you need to wait a 24-hour period. All right, that's how we paskin. So now this is the basic introduction to what we have to know. Number one, taste is essential. The taste of the food is essential. Number two, even though taste is essential, that expires. How does it expire? In one of two ways. Either that the food itself gives a bad taste to this dish. That's number one. Number two, that the even if this food theoretically would have given a good taste to the dish, after waiting 24 hours, the taste that it gives is going to be a sour taste.
Does that apply also if you didn't wash the pot afterwards, or does it have to be washed out?
It would have to be clean. It's actually mefarsh in Shulchan Aruch.
So when you have pots that are sort of seasoned, like they have woks that they season them, where they use oil and so that it maintains some flavor.
I'm not familiar. I don't know. I'd have to.
He's talking about like very fancy cookware, which nowadays is actually literally porous. So you season it with like salt and oil and
stuff.
It like right? Seeps into the really.
The goal is to get the
flavor. I don't know. I've never heard of it. It sounds like it could be problematic for this halacha. I don't know. I mean, in terms of this and Tom Lefgam,
the pots we're talking about are extremely porous. You're talking about like kiln fire clay and like really bad
metal. Right, so that's why I said we're assuming it's going to be porous.
Right.
There have been a number of people who did experiments to see if our pots actually have bleus in them, they actually absorb or not. All different conclusions have been reached. It's actually a very interesting article which is written about it. And ultimately the conclusion is inconclusive, I believe. But no one is going to be someone who's going to tell you that we just scratch out all these halachos from Shulchan Aruch. So let's assume that it absorbs.
No, his point is that even with such a pot, you're talking about the pots that they used back in even Shulchan Aruch's right. time. Clearly, you didn't have like the stainless steel we have today. So
right, but we do have a halacha of cheres.
Would make it.
We do have a halacha of cheres.
Right.
But even that would still be.
But eis la'eis would make it pugum. Correct. Because even though the tom is still there, it's considered
Right, but that wouldn't be the case when you have mamashas there. So that's really weird. Right. Okay, we're getting sidetracked, but again. But I will point out that there's a very, very interesting shach at Siman Pei Tes, which I wanted to mention last week, which we didn't. But the shach actually talks about a case where the pot is going to be dirty. We'll get there another time, and we'll discuss whether we paskin like that. Now brings us to the sugya of what's called not bar not, which is a second generation taste. What is that? The Gemara says, the Gemara is in Chulin, and daf kuf yud aleph amud beis, and the Gemara is source number 5. The Gemara says as follows, Itmar. Dagim sha'alu b'kaira, you have fish, which was served on a plate, on a dish. Rav Amar, asr lechlam b'kutach, u'shmol Amar mutu lechlam b'kutach. What it's talking about here is you have a boiling hot fish, as Rashi says in source number 6, dagim sha'alu b'kaira, min atzli, you roasted a fish, k'shahayu roischin, it was very hot, nasnan l'toicha kaira sh'achlu b'abas. So you had a fleshy dish, which you brought outside to your barbecue grill. You took a piece of fish, which is obviously parav. Fish is parav. You take it off the grill. You take that slice of fish, or that piece of fish, you put it on your plate. Now, the question now is, can I now add sour cream or some other type of milchig spread to this piece of fish? That's the Gemara's question. Rav says, Rav Amar, asa lochlam akutach. Rav says, you cannot eat this piece of fish with this dairy spread. Why? Because you just put it onto a fleshy dish. So now, your piece of fish has absorbed the taste from the fleshy dish. Shmuel Amar, Mutra Lochlam Akutach, Shmuel says you can eat this piece of fish with the dairy spread. And the Gemara explains why. Rav Amar, Asert Kaznei Sein Tamhu. Rav says it's usher because this dish now gives a meat taste into the slice of fish. And therefore, now that your piece of fish has absorbed the taste of meat, you can no longer add a dairy spread to this slice of fish. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, Mutter kaz noisin tam bar noisin tamu. It's a second generation tam. What does that mean? That means that there's no fish, there's no meat here. You didn't take meat and touch it to your fish. What you did was you had a steak on that dish, I don't know, say last night for dinner. Now it's the morning, you're having a piece of fish for breakfast. So your fish is now sitting on that plate. So think of it like this. Piece of meat, boiling hot piece of meat, goes on the plate, gives taste into the plate. And now your plate is expelling that taste. So says Shmuel, that's too far off. That's not what we're talking about. When we talk about something giving tam, we're talking about something giving tam directly. In other words, you have a pot of food sitting on top of the fire. And what happens? Inside that pot, you have meat sitting there cooking, and a piece of chalev falls in there, and you quickly yank out the piece of chalev. So now, your chalev is gone. You want to know, did that chalev give taste to the dish or not? The chalev went straight inside the pot, and it started cooking inside the pot. Your question is, did your chalev give a good taste to this dish or not? That's the case where we see there's a problem of taste. But says Shmuel, this is a second generation already, because your meat gave taste to the plate, and then the plate goes ahead and gives taste back to your fish, no problem. Okay, that's the Gemara. What's the halacha? If you look in source number 7, Omer Chizki, it's the same Gemara at the end of that daf, which actually is this daf of Gemara that I gave you, which was on page number 2. The last two lines, Omer Chizki, Mishum Abaya, Helchasa Dagim Sha'alu Bekaira, Mutter Lo'echlam Bekutach. The halacha is like Shmuel, you take a piece of fish, and you put it on a plate which was used for meat. The halacha is you're allowed to then afterwards go ahead and take cheese or a dairy spread and put it on top of your piece of fish. You can indeed eat that slice of fish with cheese. You want to pass this back? Okay, that's the first halacha that we learn. So how do we paskin with regard to that? Let's take a few steps back. We have to analyze this. Why is this halacha true? We have to understand what's going on here. Says the Ran in source number 8. V'havi yodea. It should be known. D'loy sharina nat barnat. We do not permit a nat barnat, which is nat barnat is literally a noisin tam bar noisin tam, which literally means a second generation taste. Exactly the case we illustrated. Meat gives flavor into a dish. The dish now goes ahead and gives flavor into your piece of fish. So now you have a piece of fish, which is the recipient of the taste of meat, but not from meat, from intermediary. Something else in the middle is passing on the taste. That halacha is, like we saw in the Gemara, that piece of fish is parav. You're allowed to have that piece of fish with cheese. You can take cheese and put it on top of that piece of fish.
Is that true, though, every pot? Ever?
We'll see. We'll see.
So there's no such thing as a fleshing pot or milking pot?
We'll see. Hold on. Eviyadeya deloy sharina naparnat ela bishal heter kibasar b'chalav. The only time we say this is by basar b'chalav. Dekivan de tamsheni akatiya teiruhu kivan de iklish kulihai lechashav lemeser ava b'midi di yisura kol hecha de ika taima klau. This is very important. We have to remember, when it comes to basar b'chalav, basar, meat, is permitted to be eaten. Chalav, milk, is also permissible. You're allowed to drink as much milk as you want. The problem is when you mix the two. Now, in order for a person to create basar b'chalav, he needs to have legitimate basar and legitimate chalav. But to take a weak basar or a weak chalav, a very watered down taste of basar, a watered down taste of chalav, and mix them together, you just don't have a strong enough mixture. You don't have the elements of basar and chalav which are required to make this iser. That's what the Ran says. That's the understanding of this halacha. However, let's say you took a pot that was used for nevela, or it was used for a trefa, or was used for an animal. A behemoth tomato was used for chazer, was used for, I don't know, camel meat, horse meat. That taste never ever becomes mutter. As many pots later, as many pots down the line, as many generations of taste down the line, as long as you even have a minute taste of it, it's still a minute taste of isser. And that cannot be permitted. That's what the Ran says. It should be noted that the Ramban in source number 9 disagrees with that. However, no one paskins like this Ramban. Everyone agrees. Everyone says that when it comes to isser, so in other words, take the same case that we had with our fish. You have a slice of fish, and you take and you put it onto a treifa dish, a dish that was used for chazer, or a dish that was used for nevela. So once the fish goes onto that plate and absorbs the taste of that nevela, the fish is problematic now. And you can't eat the fish because now it absorbed the taste of nevela. It's boiling hot, straight off the grill. If it's cold, that's not an issue. So now getting back to AY's question, what's this whole idea of a milchik pot or a fleshik pot? We have to remember, and we have to be very clear, that the Gemara says, dogim sha'alu b'kaira. It doesn't say dogim sha'nisbashlu b'kaira. It says dogim that was placed on to a dish. It doesn't say it was cooked there. And because of that lashon of the Gemara, because of those words of the Gemara, what happens is we find ourselves having a three-way machlekes rishonim. What happens if you were to do something different? You cook the piece of fish in a fleshik pot. What's the halacha there? If you cook the piece of fish, which is parav, in a fleshik pot, can you still add a cheese to it? That's really essentially AY's question. Is there such a thing called a fleshik pot? Because every time you have a fleshik pot, the taste that it gives out is a second generation taste. Because you don't have the meat there. If you have the meat there, it's certainly going to be treif. It's interesting that Tosfos, he quotes a Rivan who quotes Rashi. Now, we don't necessarily have this Rashi, but it's quoted in the name of the Rivan, in the name of Rashi. You want to see it in the actual source of the Gemara. It's the second page that you have. You have an arrow pointing to that line of Tosfos. But on your source packet, it's source number 10 on page 4. B'shem Rashi Pirush Rivan. In the name of Rashi, the Rivan explained, Chasani, who was his son-in-law, Dafka Alu Sharu. It's only if it was placed on the pot, on the dish, then it's going to be Mutter. Avon Nespashlu. If it was cooked, if your piece of fish was cooked in a fleshik pot, Aser. Then it's Aser. Why? It's like one taste. I'm just continuing because we don't have a minion yet, but as soon as we have a minion, we'll stop, okay? So that's very important. Number one, you have the Rivan, who writes in the name of Rashi, his father-in-law, that this whole idea is only when you have a dish which you place the hot piece of food on. But if you were to have a pot, which is fleshig, which was used for meat, and you cook fish in there, you cannot add cheese to that piece of fish. However, if you scroll down to the end of Tosfos, or you just simply take your small journey through those periods that I put on the page, the Tosfos points out that Rashi on our page seems to say very much not like that. However, mitoch lashon hakuntres, Rashi on the page, mashma de'in chilek bein olu l'nespashlu, it seemed like there's no difference between a case of where it was just simply placed on a meat dish, or if it was cooked in that case, in that dish. And if you look at your Rashi, again, Rashi, I'm just going to show it to you outside, but Rashi appears in source number 6 on page 3 or on the left side of your Gemara page. Rashi says, one case where Shmuel agrees you can't add cheese to the fish is in the last line of source number 6. Inami moide shmosh asr lechel chalav reseach bekaira denoisin tam rishin hu. If you have denoisin tam rishin havi kibasar gamar of a kaira zu, he atzma in a basar al denoisin tam in a kibasar. You have a minion?
We need one more.
Sorry. So what Rashi points out over here is that Shmuel would agree that if you cook the fish with meat in the pot, you can't add cheese to it. Now, why does Rashi have to say that? Why can Rashi just say, if you cook it in a fleshic pot, you can't add cheese? The answer is because Rashi himself is of the opinion that even if you cook it in the pot, it would be fine. We'll stop here, but this really is the introduction to answering our Shiloh. We'll continue Mitzvah Shem next week with much more details and practical applications of these halachas.